Good morning, everybody. Hello. We've had a good week this week. I've got a new companion into my drive into work, which is nice, as Caspian started his first week at nursery, which also meant that I got to introduce him to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on our drive-in. So if his words, first words are going to be, don't panic, you'll know why. Cool, so today we're going to be picking up the book of Philippians, which we're going to continue with for the rest of this term, and we're going to start at the end of chapter 1. So Paul and his companions began the church at Philippi on his second missionary journey. This was the first church established on the European continent. The Philippian church had sent a gift to Paul whilst he was in a Roman prison at that time, and he wrote this letter to thank them for their gift and to encourage them in their faith. In the verses prior, Paul described how living means living for Christ and dying is even better. But in life, he can do more fruitful work for Christ. He said, I long to go on to be with Christ, which would be far better for me, but for your sake, it is better that I continue to live. Today, we'll cover Philippians 1, verses 27 to 30, in which Paul describes how, in this life, we should live as citizens of heaven. So we'll just go through that now, and the word should come up on the screen. Above all, you should live as citizens of heaven, conducting yourself in a manner worthy of the good news about Christ. Then, whether I come and see you again, or only hear about you, I will know that you are standing together with one spirit and one purpose, fighting together for the faith, which is the good news. Don't be intimidated in any way by your enemies. This will be a sign to them that they are going to be destroyed and that you are going to be saved, even by God himself. For you have been given not only the privilege of trusting in him, of trusting in Christ, but also the privilege of suffering for him. We are in this struggle together. You have seen my struggle in the past, and you know that I'm still in the midst of it. So, verse 27, living as citizens of heaven, or living as citizens of God's kingdom. To live as a citizen of heaven and to conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, as some translations put it, is to keep a heavenly mindset and to allow that to affect your behavior here on earth. When you are a citizen or of a country or a place, that place becomes your very being and changes the way that you think and the way that you act. We don't know what heaven is like, so it can be hard for us to tell what being a citizen of heaven is, and thus what we should look to imitate. One man who tried to capture the essence of what heaven is like, and thus being a citizen of heaven, is C.S. Lewis in his series on Narnia. These books show a clear demonstration of what becoming a citizen or a part of a new world is like, and allowing that to change the way that you think and the way that you act. So let's take a look at a couple of examples. In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, we are introduced to four sibling children, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. They are sent away from London during the war because of air raids and find themselves in a house of an old professor in the heart of the country. At this time, the children are young, scared, and curious about their new surroundings. We see them squabble and nag each other as young, close siblings would, until the point when Peter suggests exploring the house. In one of the rooms, we find it quite empty, except for one big wardrobe. Thinking nothing of it, they all exit the room apart from Lucy. Looking inside the wardrobe, she walks through it and finds herself in the snowy land of Narnia. During this time, Lucy befriends a faun called Mr. Tumnus and then returns to England back through the wardrobe. She runs to the other three, amazed that they have not been wondering where she is, as in England, no time had passed at all. As she tries to describe how she had been away for hours, the others pitied her in their unbelief and dismissed her story as attention-seeking. For days later, Lucy is miserable, and as a truthful girl, Knowing that she was right, she did not want to make it up to the others by saying that she'd made the whole story up. And the others, who thought it was a lie and a silly lie, made her very unhappy. Peter and Susan did so without meaning to, but Edmund, who was spiteful, sneered and jeered at Lucy and kept asking her if she'd found any new countries in other cupboards all over the house. Lucy then decides to return to Narnia through the wardrobe, and this time Edmund follows her, without her knowledge. At the end of this experience, to Lucy's delight, she discovers Edmund in Narnia, and they both return to England. Excited, Lucy rushes to tell Peter and Susan that it's all true and that Edmund has seen it too. But when confronted, Edmund gave a very superior look and a little snigger, exclaiming that he and Lucy had been playing and pretending that her story in a country in the wardrobe was all true. Lucy ran out of the room in tears, and Edmund, who was becoming a nastier person every minute, thought that he had scored a great success. Peter and Susan decided to tell the professor all that had gone on, to which the professor told them to consider who was most truthful and who was most likely to lie. A few days later, following an escape from the housekeeper, all four siblings hid in a wardrobe and found themselves in Narnia. Now, I won't go into detail on their adventures in Narnia, but what follows is a betrayal from Edmund, followed by reconciliation, forgiveness, and forgiveness. We see all our characters begin to change and develop as they are in Narnia. Peter becomes braver and develops into a leader. Edmund becomes wiser, Susan more caring, and Lucy matures and becomes happier. At the end of their adventure, all four are crowned kings and queens of Narnia. They have a long and happy reign ruling over Narnia in its golden years. The final chapter describes how their characters, appearances, and speech change as they become residents of Narnia. I'll now read an insert from that closing chapter. These two kings and two queens governed Narnia well, and long and happy was their reign. At first, much of their time was spent seeking out the remnants of the White Witch's army and destroying them. And indeed, for a long time, there'd be news of evil things lurking in the wilder parts of the forest. A haunting here, a killing there, a glimpsing of a werewolf one month and a rumor of a hag the next. But in the end, all that foul brood was stamped out. And they made good laws and kept the peace and saved good trees from being unnecessarily cut down, and liberated young dwarfs and young satyrs from being sent to school, and generally stopped busybodies and interferers, and encouraged ordinary people who wanted to live and let live. And they drove back the fierce giants in the north of Narnia when these ventured across the frontier. And they entered into friendship and alliance with the countries beyond the sea, and paid them visits of state, and they themselves received visits of state from them. And they themselves grew and changed as years passed over them. And Peter became a tall and deep-chested man and a great warrior, and he was called King Peter the Magnificent. And Susan grew into a tall and gracious woman with black hair that fell almost to her feet, and the kings of countries beyond the sea began to send their ambassadors asking for her hand in marriage, and she was called Queen Susan the Gentle. Edmund was a graver and quieter man than Peter and great in counsel and judgment. He was called King Edmund the Just. And as for Lucy, she was always happy and golden-haired, and all the princes in those parts desired her to be their queen. And her own people called her Queen Lucy the Valiant. So they lived in great joy, and if ever they remembered their life in this world, it was only as one remembers a dream. Now they go on to search out a white stag, which is said to bring them wishes. And just to give you an example of the change of their speech. Then said King Peter, for they talked in quite a different style now, having been kings and queens for so long. Fair consorts, let us now alight from our horses and follow this beast into the thicket, for in all my days I have never hunted a nobler quarry. Sir, said the others, even so let us do. The characters continue to develop throughout the series, And as we see each time they appear in Narnia, the characteristics and being of who they were as kings and queens returns to them. We can see a stark difference in the character when the four siblings are citizens of England compared to the strengthening and the deepening of their characters and behaviors when they are citizens of Narnia. The difference of being a citizen of Narnia can also be seen in the next book, The Horse and His Boy. This book is set during the reign of Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, but in a different country within that world, called Calorman. This is a country of cruelty, of poverty, and slaves. Throughout the book, we follow the journey of a young boy called Shasta, who has grown up poor and unloved in a harsh country. He is convinced by a Narnian horse called Bree to escape and run away to Narnia. Partway through their journey, they come across the capital city of Calorman, a huge and busy city. And watching on, Shasta sees a procession of Narnians walking across the street, of which contains Edmund and Susan. It says, instead of being grave and mysterious like the Calormans, they walked with a swing and let their arms and shoulders go free and chatted and laughed. One whistled. You could see that they were ready to be friends with anyone who was friendly and didn't give a fig for anyone who wasn't. Shasta thought he had never seen anything so lovely in his life. In this example, we can see that the Narnians are free, they're happy, they're kind, and without the pressures of life that weigh us down. We will one day grow into these great and beautiful characters as they did in Narnia when we are with Jesus in heaven. But for today, here on earth, we can bring our character in line with that of heaven to reflect an essence of what our future selves will be like. As citizens of heaven, of God's kingdom, we must allow our characters and behaviors here on earth to be like those of heaven, and thus act in a manner worthy of being a citizen of heaven and worthy of Christ's gospel. Secondly, verse 28, don't be intimidated by your enemies. Now, as citizens of heaven, you will stand out, and you will be different from those who live with an earthly mindset. As we saw with the Narnian procession through the streets of Calorman, you'll stand out. There'll be those that oppose you, but don't be alarmed by them or frightened that they will oppose you. For this demonstrates that they don't understand the things of God, and it's a sign that you do understand and that you have been saved. A few years after returning to England, in the book The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, we see Lucy and Edmund go to stay with their aunt and uncle and cousin Eustace. I'm going to read you a description of Eustace. So this is the very first page of the book. There was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it. His parents called him Eustace Clarence, and masters called him Scrub. I can't tell you how his friends spoke to him, for he had none. He didn't call his father and mother, but Harold and Alberta. They were very up-to-date and advanced people. They were vegetarians, non-smokers, and teetotalers, and wore a special kind of underclothes. In their house, there was a very little furniture and very few clothes on the bed, and the windows were always open. Eustace Clarence liked animals, especially beetles, if they were dead and pinned on a card. He liked books, if they were books of information, and had pictures of grain elevators or of fat foreign children doing exercises in model schools. Eustace Clarence disliked his cousins, the four Pevensies, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. But he was quite glad when he heard that Edmund and Lucy had come to stay, for deep down inside him, he liked bossing and bullying. And though he was a puny little person who couldn't have stood up to Lucy, let alone Edmund, in a fight, he knew that there were dozens of ways to give people a bad time if you're in your own home and they are only visitors. While staying at their aunt and uncle's, Edmund and Lucy liked to talk of Narnia often with each other. In Lucy's room, there was a picture of a ship that looked very much like a Narnian ship. One day, Edmund and Lucy were in her room looking at the picture and discussing Narnia when Eustace came in with the intent of teasing them and making their life miserable because of their belief. The question is, said Edmund, whether it doesn't make it worth looking at a Narnian ship when you can't get there. Even looking is better than nothing, said Lucy, and she is such a very Narnian ship. Still playing your old game, said Eustace Clarence, who'd been listening outside the door and now came grinning into the room. Last year, when he'd been staying with the Pevensies, he'd managed to hear them all talk of Narnia, and he loved teasing them about it. He thought, of course, that they were making it all up, and as he was far too stupid to make anything up himself, he did not approve of that. You're not wanted here, said Edmund curtly. I'm thinking of a limerick, said Eustace, something like this. Some kids who played games about Narnia got gradually balmier and balmier. Well, Narnia and balmier don't rhyme to begin with, said Lucy. It's an assonance, said Eustace. Don't ask him what an assy thing he is, said Edmund. He's longing to be asked. Say nothing and perhaps he'll go away. Most boys on meeting a reception like this would either have cleared out or flared up. Eustace did neither. He just hung about grinning and presently began talking again. Do you like that picture? He asked. For heaven's sake, don't let him get started about art and all that, said Edmund hurriedly. But Lucy, who was very truthful and had already said, yes, I do like it very much. It's a rotten picture, said Eustace. You won't see it from if you step outside the door, said Edmund. Despite the teasing, Edmund and Lucy knew that Narnia was real and dismissed the opposition brought by Eustace. Beyond this, they cared for him, especially Lucy, as when all three had entered Narnia and boarded the ship, the Dawn Treader, Eustace did everything that he could to make everyone miserable and stayed in bed seasick. He had Lucy stay with him and care for him throughout that journey. Eustace, stubborn in his unbelief of Narnia, never really believed, often asking to be taken to the British consul on their journey, until the point that he met with Aslan. After that, his character grows and develops throughout their adventure, and he returns to England as a changed person because of Narnia. The last two books describe how the effect of being in Narnia improves his character in England and his attitudes as he begins to love Narnia. Much like the opposition brought by Eustace, there'll be those that oppose you for being citizens of heaven and acting in a way worthy of the gospel. But you don't need to be concerned about those opposing you, as that opposition demonstrates that you understand the things of God, as Lucy and Edmund understood what it was like to be in Narnia, and demonstrates that they do not understand the things of God, as Eustace had no idea what it was like to be in Narnia. So, remember, when opposition appears, you have been saved, and they are yet to understand what that means. In the last two verses, Paul talks about suffering as a citizen of heaven. Paul concludes that as citizens of heaven, it is likely that you will suffer for Christ during your time on earth. He considered it a privilege to suffer for Christ. We do not by nature consider suffering a privilege, yet when we suffer, if we faithfully represent Christ as citizens of heaven, our message and example affect us and the others around us for good. It serves as an example to others who know you and your character that we are citizens of heaven. When we suffer for our faith, it doesn't mean that we've done anything wrong. In fact, the opposite is true. It verifies that we've been faithful and builds our character. Thus, what a privilege it is to get to suffer for Christ, as it builds our character more like those of heaven and demonstrates to unbelievers around us the strength and the love of a citizen of heaven. However, if you keep an earthly mindset and your concern is on the things of this world, then when suffering approaches, you will struggle. And you'll not gain the benefits of strengthening in your character or demonstrating to those around you what the people of heaven are like. So, Considering the stories we've heard today, we are not in the magical and the wonderful land of Narnia. We are in the real world of the wet and grey England. So, what does it mean for us to live as citizens of heaven and to conduct ourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ in this real world? I've got a picture here. Who remembers these bands? When they come up. Who can tell me what the WWJD stands for? Yes, exactly. So, in all situations that we face in this world, we need to remind ourselves, what would Jesus do? And then do that. It's that straightforward. So, who can tell me? How do we know what Jesus would do? Yes, read the Bible. Which part of the Bible will tell you what Jesus would do? The Gospels, fantastic. So, the Gospels gives a good description about what Jesus would do in the situations that we face. So, we need to regularly read and reread the Gospels to understand what Jesus would do. So, to conclude, to live as a citizen of heaven, of God's kingdom, we should act as Jesus would, allowing that to change our thoughts, behaviors, characters here on earth. To know what Jesus would do, we should return to the Gospels again and again and again. As you seek to make these changes in your life, you will face opposition. But that just proves that you understand Jesus and they do not, and that you have been saved. When suffering approaches, consider this a privilege, as it will be an opportunity to strengthen your character as a citizen of heaven and demonstrate that character to those unbelievers around you. I'd like to ask the band to come back up, please. As the band are getting ready, please take this opportunity, this time, an opportunity to consider when in your life you can read and reread the Gospels to understand more of what Jesus would do and enact that in your life. Think about where and what parts of your life you can be changing your attitude more like those of heaven. Thank you.